Reverend Barbara Merritt writes this. It's entitled, In Your Eyes. Someone recently told me that he thinks God shows up after one dies in whatever form will bring the most comfort to the individual soul. So, if you're a Christian, God would come to you in the form of Jesus. If you're a Buddhist, God would appear as Buddha. If you're an atheist, God will flood your heart, soul, and mind with love and truth, that the love and truth you've been looking for so fiercely in the world. Even if you're a cat, God will come to you as a cat. That's what the friend believed. If you deeply love someone who has died, this friend went on to say, and heaven could only mean a reconciliation with that person, then God would come for you as that individual. A musician, we have plenty of those here, a musician would be welcomed by magnificent music, the artist by beauty, the poet by sublime lyrics. Barbara Merritt goes on to write, it makes a certain intuitive sense that according to the limits of our own perception, we will see what is real in different ways. Here on earth, human beings perceive truth and reality in their own idiosyncratic ways. I am drawn to Dan Ledinsky's translation of a Hafez poem about seeing God. The poet wrote that when God wants to make his presence known on earth, he makes his appearance in the love and playfulness in your eyes. In your eyes? In my eyes? Is it possible that sometimes we are not even aware that we are bearing witness to a power greater than ourselves? When we love one another, when we have enough trust and gladness, we are often playful. Lightheartedness, enthusiasm, and animated exuberance are so powerful that they allow us to see the divine in each other. Some look for God in temples, rituals, and scriptures. Others look for God still in the sunsets or in an autumn leaf. But the greatest reassurance I have experienced, writes Barbara, is when God takes human form. God is made real in the human eyes that bless us with their love and laughter. The way we look at one another has the power to make God's presence known on earth. I love that image of hers. So many of us go to that place of eyes being the window to the soul. It can be true. It can also seem overly used, a bit cliche as much as we talk about it. But there's an element of truth to it. That when we look at each other deeply, finding a way to connect beyond just the words we say or the personalities we take on, when we look at each other and the soul of the person and their humanity, something shifts. Oftentimes, I find myself kind of looking at other people, my wife, any of you, just as kind of the person, as their identity. But there are these moments. It first happened when I worked in a hospital where I could sit there and truly listen, and I saw more than the whole, more than the body, the persona, the identity. But I saw the face, the way the lines shifted around someone. Their very body had grown to a certain way. Their eyes moved differently, and our voices changed, though of course they didn't, but we heard each other. This is a theology often connected to Martin Buber's I and Thou, moving beyond using people or things just to get somewhere, just as a means to an end, recognizing who we are at some fundamental level, each human, each holy. A few weeks ago, I took my little one, Elijah, with me to Walgreens to get some medicine. Now, most of you, if you've gone to Walgreens, you do not think of it as the like quintessential party toy store, right? But a two-year-old, my two-year-old at least, loves Walgreens because that's his toy store, he thinks. So as we pulled up, he even knew where we were. And so we had our usual negotiation, which is that I said, you could look at toys, cool, but we're not going to buy them. He said, okay, Daddy, no buy toys, right? No buy toys. All right, we're on the same page. We're walking through and we pick up some medicine. We hadn't quite yet gotten to the toy aisle. In fact, there are a couple at Walgreens. We hadn't gotten there yet. Then Elijah caught something. It was somewhat out of place in the medical supply section near the bandages and the gauze. And it was right there at eye level, for that's an important place in our lives. When it's right there, easy for us to see. We don't have to look too far back, too far ahead, too high or too low. It was one of those little Beanie Babies. Do you know what I mean? The little stuffed animals that are easy to move around. But it was really small. And for some reason, even I thought that it wasn't quite as ugly and annoying as many of those can be. It was on a keychain, meant to stay with you at all times. And it was a little fox. It's fascinating to me because Elijah didn't ask for the toy. What I heard him say was, "Fox, fox have beautiful eyes." And I looked. And it was true. They did. I didn't know this kid knew beautiful, or maybe eyes, he probably knew, but let alone the context that something, another living thing, or at least something imitating that living thing, should or could have beautiful eyes. But in many ways, that's something that carries all of us forth. Barbara Merritt's words remind us that God can be made real. Whatever God is to us, whether it's a thing or just an element of love, is made real in the human eyes that bless us with their love and laughter. In working on this worship, kind of doing some work before and talking with Melissa Harshman, who bought this sermon and gave me some brilliant, not only ideas and prompts, but such great insight. She told me this. In her work in genealogy, she's really come to discover that we are the culmination of every decision, every action and word, every choice made, everything done, and all the things we chose not to do, every inaction, every time we didn't say the word that we could have. It can be mind-blowing to think about, to place ourselves at the end of a long line of lives. But it's worth spending some time to think about, to realize how we got to this place, the luck, perhaps, or the providence that gets us there. Life does not just happen. The circumstances of our existence, the ways we think, act, speak, things we believe and do and love, the ways that we interact, those are not only accidents or coincidences, but rather an incredible set of dominoes that have fallen a very particular way. It's important, then, for us to look back on our life, not to be too bound to it, but to look back to know what it was. Both as individuals, this is helpful, as we can look at our family tree and chart where we've gone, finding the neat story, being surprised when some of the family legends are true, and being surprised when they're still legend. It's also important to look back culturally, whether it's in a congregation or for our society, to figure out how did we get to this point. No moment, no person exists in a vacuum. Only by looking back and holding on to the past for what it is, not over-dramatizing it, not underselling it, just being what it is, can we move forward? Thich Nhat Hanh and The Thing That Star Read, the five awarenesses, one of the ones I love the most is the awareness that our joy, peace, and freedom and harmony are the joy, peace, freedom, and harmony of our ancestors, our children, and even their children. Matter isn't created or destroyed. It just is, and it continues even emotionally between us. We often hear the stories passed down in our families and can think of questions. You know, what would have happened if someone's father had taken the other bus or not missed the bus? If we had gone to one school over another or taken the job? It's hard to know how things would have turned out. So when we pause for a moment to realize how we got here, it can be daunting, but it can also be inspiring. To know that we are here is important, and we can look at it as though we are meant to be here for a reason. There's a story in the Hebrew Bible of Esther. Esther was a Jew, and her uncle Mordecai was the leader of the Jews. And when Esther ended up married to the king in the area, Mordecai suggested, you know, don't tell people your ancestry, your lineage. That's not going to be useful to you in this kingdom. Sure enough, after a while, after many of the Jews had been oppressed, the king, for various reasons, had planned to kill the Jews in the land. Mordecai came to the castle and knocked on the door and asked for Esther. He asked her to make some difference, to go to the king and plead to save the lives of their people because she was made for just such a time as this. And that was hard and scary for Esther. She hadn't talked to the king in a month. It's a weird marriage in a way, but hadn't talked or seen him in a month. Maybe that's how it worked. No one could get to the king without an invitation, but she went there, and she wasn't sure how she would broach the subject, which seemed somewhat as a betrayal, something, a sin of omission that she hadn't shared before. But Mordecai pleaded, look back on your people and your life and recognize that you are here for a reason. And so she did. She went to the king, potentially offering up the one thing that could lead to ending her own life. She gave up her safety she could have hidden behind, people not knowing her ancestry, to help others. Our lives and our identities, our stories, aren't meant to be hidden so that we can slip by the guards or so that we can pretend that we are one of the cool kids, that we have nothing going on behind the masks we wear. By looking back at our history and knowing more about the foundation on which we stand, we can know more about what grounds us and where we're headed. It can start to explain some of the patterns and habits that once seemed unique or unexplainable. How many of us have seen something in our lives and wondered, where did that quirk come from? Only to have someone say, oh yeah, great aunt so-and-so did that. Your mom did that. Didn't you realize that? Your eyes, your face, your hands are just like that. Your characteristics, the way you talk. These things, when we start to look back, help us discover some explanations, but not everything is passed down from generation to generation. At times, things seem to skip back and forth, and I think of that as a dialectic. Some of you may recall Hegel and the idea that the dialectic, we respond and react to what is, moving back and forth, circling around. We do, and yet we seek progress. The way that we can do that is to move forward holding our past, just as it is, not letting it become too heavy, too much of a burden to bear. I think about it in a way as an emotional debt. If you have debt, often in our society, there is an interest that you're going to have to pay on that debt, right? And so if you don't pay it down immediately, if you only deal with it a little bit at a time, or God forbid, you just ignore it altogether, things are going to rack up, and it becomes hard to deal with. Our lives, our past, all of that can be that emotional debt, and without attending to it in some way, the interest becomes too high, can be overbearing. And so, what can we do to share our stories, not keep the family secrets quiet, not be shamed or embarrassed or fearful that other people might see our lives as tainted, but to walk around knowing each of us have the weird quirks and weird stories in our family. Once we take hold of this past and move forward, we can create something special. We must recognize that we are at once infinitely complex beings, brought to life by billions upon billions of miracles that could never be replicated again. We are born for just such a time as this. And at the very same time, we are but one speck on the timeline of a universe that extends far beyond anything we could imagine. there are two fundamental truths that we hold in our hearts at the same time. We cannot completely change the world we live in. And by living, we change the world. To hold both of those, to accept that we cannot do it all, but to commit to doing what we can, is a critical test of our character. To actively participate in life and how we live and what we want to pass down, because all of our things get passed down in some way, to do that rather than live as though we are completely passive is to embrace the gift of life we were given, short though it may be, though beautiful it is. The fullness of life, the generations of those who came before, the love of family, whether biological or chosen, the potential and promise of future generations, all of it, all of that can be seen in one beautiful, mystical, holy place. In your eyes, and in my eyes, in our eyes. Amen, and blessed be.